Each year, the Army honors installations that have gone the furthest to save energy and preserve the environment. The lessons from this year's winners? Well, there's no single way to go green. There are lots of ways. Catherine Hammack is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And she joins us now to explain what those facilities do right. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me to join you.
All right. Now, I'm seeing a range of places, from giants like Fort Hood to an Army National Guard Camp Johnson in Vermont. What do they have in common?
Well, one thing these bases all have in common is that they're balancing compliance with various legislative and regulatory requirements with environmental protection, natural resource stewardship, and innovative management against the Army military mission. And if we keep everything in the right balance, then we have success.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you honored these various camps and installations for, because it seems like there's a whole range of techniques they're using all to get to the same goal. Prescribed fire management, solar panels. What do they all have in common in terms of how they've implemented their own techniques?
One thing they all have in common is that they have a unique approach, and they're each different. And so that's sort of funny to say, but if you look at, for instance, the Vermont National Guard, they are in a location that is a rare ecosystem. It's a fire-adapted ecosystem. So these pines, there are some pitch pines that grow in sand dunes that are sort of left over from the ice age, and those pine cones don't open until they reach a certain temperature. So it's a fire-adapted ecosystem where in the natural environments we all know that lightning strikes start fires, and fires then cause this ecosystem to grow and remain healthy. But we have fire brigades that are trained to fight fires, and we all try and keep fires down. So what you have to do is keep this in balance, and they are doing prescribed burns in order to keep these pitch pine habitats healthy, while at the same time they're practicing good fire management.
Pretty cool. And now let's talk about Fort Hood for a moment, because that's practically a city unto itself.
Absolutely, and Fort Hood is one of our largest bases. Fort Hood does a great job in balancing the environmental needs from good waste management. For an instance, they have saved about over 3 million gallons of water from discharge into sewer by filtering water and using that for irrigation. They've also recycled over 16,000 tons of trash last year, which generated about $3 million in revenue that can be used to support the recycling program, and some of that money goes back to the base to support family and soldier events.
So overall, you're talking, it seems, about installations that have managed to respect the environment around them. But normally when we think of Army bases or facilities, they've got this really big footprint, and it really disturbs the natural environment, the community. The community is based around it. So is this sort of a change in tune that we've seen over the years, trying to get back to perhaps the way things were before the Army ever came in?
Well, one of the things that's interesting that we see is that Army bases quite often are the only green space left in a city environment. So what happens as the city moves in and residential neighborhoods are developed is we see a migration of species onto the base. So the Army has about 200, a little over 200, endangered species that are primarily found on our Army bases because we have such natural habitat. We don't use all of the land. Quite a bit of the land is buffer land, or we have compatible use buffers where this land is sort of set aside, acting as a buffer against noise, but also a buffer for the endangered species to live in. But another unique thing, as you mentioned, the bases are very large. Up in Fort Wainwright, Alaska, they have 652 archaeological sites there and 411 historic buildings that they manage. And they have a great partnership with Texas A&M for an archaeology field school. And so Texas A&M students aid in survey and site testing. They learn about archaeology. At the same time, we learn which sites to preserve and set aside so that our activities on the base don't endanger some of the heritage that exists there.
We're speaking with Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And give us an idea of the process by which a particular location decides, here's what we're going to do, who approves it, and who carries it out.
Well, a lot of the assessment, you know, they apply for this environmental award, and we have a team here at the Pentagon that reviews the applications and identifies those exemplary practices in several categories, whether it's a great environmental quality team, whether it's a natural resource management for a small installation or large installation, or sustainability even in our industrial installations as well as our large teams. So we have about 7 different categories that we judge the installations in and then identify the award winners. One of the reasons we publicize what they're doing is it's a great example for other bases to follow, but other cities and other large landholders to learn from our experiences.
And along those lines, if you look at each of the award winners, they're each doing something different. What can other bases take away from this as lessons for them to do?
One of the best things that they can take away is the teaming with the communities. Because when we partner with the communities, we are stewarding the environment for future generations. We're also helping the community understand what is existing in their ecosystems that we can all work together to preserve, whether it's on the installation or off the installation. And that's what we really want to be, is great partners with the communities in which our soldiers live, work, and train.
Now, we've talked a lot about outdoors. Of course, Army installations, especially the big Army, regular Army ones, have a lot of housing, and they have a lot of food service operations, things that tend to produce waste and trash. Has that been a big focus? I mean, for like just the daily feeding of large numbers of soldiers and the waste that's involved there?
Absolutely. We look at recycling the food waste, and many of our bases have great composting programs. You know, you can think of a composting program as something you do in your own backyard, but you could take it up to a scale that we see on our installations. And when you compost all that food waste and some of the other landscaping waste together, you're generating a great fertilizer that then can be reused back on the base. So we have a net zero waste program where we're trying to reduce the amount or eliminate waste going to landfills through composting, through recycling, through good stewardship of what we buy. If we buy things that have minimal waste, then we won't have as much waste going to landfill. So it is really a holistic program to manage energy, manage water, and manage waste on our installations so that we are in harmony with the resources or limited resources that are available.
And as the Army tries towards these goals, have you seen at bases on the local levels more hiring of specialists with this type of expertise in environmental and sustainability focuses, or is it more that each person is taking on more of this knowledge and more of this responsibility?
We do hire specialists who have training in this, but sometimes the people who work on these programs are homegrown. They get their training through on-the-job training. So it is through a diverse mix of talent. But you would be amazed at the amount of ologists that we have, you know, people who are ecologists or people who work in other scientific fields who lend their expertise. You know, we have an Army Environmental Command that is based in San Antonio, Texas, which is a resource for all of our bases to reach back to when they need an archaeologist or when they need someone who has a special degree, an entomologist who is working on bugs. You know, we have so many endangered species that we have to try and figure out how we can conduct the Army mission in harmony with the other resources or species that are on our bases.
I just have one more recycling question for you. It's probably arcane, but it's always I've always wondered about this. At the big bases where Army conducts regular training exercises of recruits and of, you know, people coming back for training, a lot of bullets get fired in training. All that metal and brass and so forth, casings, does that all get gathered up in some way for recycling as scrap?
Absolutely, and we do have a great metal recycling program. You know, one of the award recipients is an Army ammunition plant where they are working to produce lead-free bullets, and they've already eliminated 1,600 tons of lead from their manufacturing processes over the last couple of years. But that means then when the bullets are shot at our ranges, they are more environmentally sensitive. But a lot of our recycling is brass recycling. And matter of fact, we have so much brass casing recycling that we have excess. One of our first means of recycling is to get them back to reloaders so they can be made back into new bullets. And we post lots for sale. But we have excess of that. And when we have excess, what we do then is we crush them and we sell them as scrap metal, and they go back into the manufacturing process to be made into something new. So certainly recycling of munitions is one of the things that is a leading recycling program and certainly has a lot of value to our installations.
And I guess probably because of the commodity prices, brass is, in particular, is worth a lot of money now.
It is worth a lot of money, but certainly we want to make sure first that it goes into a process that is the lowest cost to the environment, and that's to make use of the product without it going back and having to be melted down. So we try and find a market for it first, but if there is more available than there is a market for it, then it goes back into the recycling stream, which is a scrap metal stream.
Catherine Hammack is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. Catherine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom and Emily. Have a great day.